What's up, Jimmy Rhodes?
Hey, Jimmy. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Jimmy Rhodes. I am honored to be interviewed by you.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy.
I know, man. I feel so good.
Hey, Jimmy, why don't you play him a song?
Jimmy Rhodes! Let's go!
It says recording is in progress. That's
okay,
it.
Okay, good.
I see you.
Okay, well, let's do this, shall we?
Okay, sure.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Jimmy Rhodes Show. And one more episode on my series focusing on the upcoming Mount Maskus 50 Miler, a race that has been around since 1983. I was just 7 years old in 1983. Van Halen's 1984 album had not even been released, and there was not many ultramarathon races in the United States, although I think there was more than someone like me would actually be aware of. So the question is, what was David Horton doing in 1983? Why did he decide to start the Mount Maskus 50 Miler, and what made it so special that here, 42 years later, it's still going strong? Let's talk to the man himself, a true legend in Virginia ultra running, not because of his running results, but because of how much he's given to the sport and its participants. None other than the one and only Dr. David Horton. Welcome, David.
Thank you, John. Glad
yes.
to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And here I am putting in the workouts and long runs in mid-October. It must be masochist season. So how do you feel about being the reason so many people have trained so hard in September and October for the past 42 years?
How do I feel? One time someone said this about me. They said, because of Horton, many have suffered. And I think that is true. But then someone else said, well, because of Horton, many have accomplished more than they ever thought they could possibly accomplish. And I hope that is true. I know both of those statements are true. And that was why I started it, because back in 1979, I ran my first ultra, the JFK 50,
okay.
50-mile trail race. And back then, there wasn't that many races around. Like I said, there's probably more than we think there was, but there still wasn't like there is now. There's tons now. In fact, on the day of the Maskus, there's another ultra 50-mile race that's less than an hour away. So
yep.
There's a lot going on. And overall, that's good news that there's a lot of races. It sort of thins the people out at any one particular race. But basically, I wanted people around here to have an opportunity to run a race. And, 21 started, 12 finished that first year. So that's not many, but then became 40 and then 80 and then 100 and then went up from there. So the numbers increased, and basically the number of people who had run ultras had increased in the area. And people knew other people who had run 50 miles. And so I think that was a cool thing. And now even the young people know about it now. Back then it was primarily the older people. People in their 30s and 40s, and now you see people in their 20s and even less than that. So
yeah.
Basically, I started the Maskus to give people an opportunity around here to run a 50-mile ultra marathon.
All right. Well, you touched on that your first ultra was in 1979. Yeah. Jimmy Carter was president then, just as a reminder. And you ran the JFK. Where were you in your kind of like running career, so to speak, 4 years in? Were you doing tons of road marathons and tons of ultra marathons that you could get your hand on? What kind of brought you to be in the point where you said, hey, I think I'm going to start one of these races?
Basically, I'd been running a number of marathons, and I'd also been running a number of ultra marathons, and I was fast at that time. I ran fast. I can't believe how fast I ran back then. When I look at some of the times that I ran, it really impresses me now. Then it didn't impress me that much,
yeah.
But now it does. I just don't understand how I was able to run that fast. But I was running well, running fast, and my goal was to start the Mount Mascus, win it the first year, and then run it thereafter. And that's exactly what I did. I won the first one by 13 seconds. I knew I had it won by 50 yards from the finish line. I knew I had it wrapped up. I knew the guy couldn't catch me. And this guy who was trying to catch me, who had passed it 47 miles, was Rob Landis, and he was from Alta, Utah. And I looked up his what he had done, and he had won some race called Wasatch 100. And I thought, what's that? You know? Whoa. And he had won, I think he'd won it twice. And I thought, well, he can't be that good. Well, he was. He was that good. And that was the only time I ever saw him. I take that back, in person. I did see him one other time, and he was on TV in World Survival of the Fittest. Huh. And he was second in the world in the Survival of the Fittest. So the guy was good. The guy was real good.
Huh. So, yeah, I think you did something that many people would not do or advise, which is run the race that you're directing. And
that's a mistake.
Yeah, that's tough. As we talked to Tom Green, and he said he got lost, and you know, I'm sure you probably wished you were somewhere on the course versus running it, but I'm sure you were glad you ran it as well. What about professionally? What were you doing there? Were you working at the time as a professor at Liberty, or?
Yes, I came to Liberty in the fall of 1978.
Okay.
And taught at Liberty for 46 years.
Wow.
And just retired this past spring. So I was a teacher then, and into exercise and into running. And early on, I was in the marathons. And then I read about this race, the JFK 50, and I thought, huh. And when I went to run it, I'd never met anyone who had ever run a 50-mile race or an ultra marathon. And I met someone the day before the race, and that was the beginning of it all.
Wow. And how about family-wise, too? I mean, when I think of race directing now, I direct a lot of races, local stuff around here. It takes a lot of time. So you had kids and were married at the time. I mean, do you remember kind of where you were in that phase of life?
Let's see, how old were my kids at that time? I'm not even sure. I can't even figure it out. My
Sorry
son's
to
51.
Have you do math on the spot.
I know it. I know it. And what was my undergraduate degree in? Math. My son is 51 now, and I'm 75, so 24 years. He was 8 or 9 years old,
yeah,
so he
wasn't
very old at all.
Yeah.
At that time. And then I also had a daughter at that time who was 2 years younger than that, so... Yeah, life was busy. It was good, but it was busy.
I guess that's what I was getting at. I figured that's a busy time of life when you have those little ones, and you're just trying to, you know, keep everything together. And again, at some point, you had enough energy as well as duty or commitment and inspiration to start a race, which we're very grateful that you did, but I know that's a hard balance. Where did the idea for the, like, the course come from? Tell me about that, because it's not the same as it is now. It used to be a point to point, but it still finishes the same. The second half is roughly the same. So how did you come up with that?
Well, basically what had happened, I was training, and at that time I was doing some training on trails, not a lot, but I was doing some training on trails. And I found this map, and it was a map of the Appalachian Trail, and it was from the James River to the Tye River, and that's James River to the Tye River, and it was 46 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I could add a couple miles on the end, a couple miles to start, and have a 50-mile race, because I thought that would be good. And then I checked with the Appalachian Trail Conference, and they said, no way. They mm-hmm. would not let me.
Yeah.
And I talked to the ranger in the area, and we sat down and figured out a course that would roughly parallel going from the James River towards the Tye River. But then I said, well, we got to have some place to finish. So we thought about Montebello. And so we're just going to finish in Montebello. And when we figured it out, it was 46 miles in length. And then I said, well, now we need to we need to be closer to 50, not 46. And so basically he said, well, I'll tell you what we can do here. That ranger helped me out with it. He said, let's add this 5 mile loop. I said, it's 46 plus five. That's roughly 50. And so that's the way the course started. The ranger helped me. And basically I was wanting to run from the James River to the Tie River on the Appalachian Trail. But of course, the only race that is allowed to race on the Appalachian Trail is the JFK 50. And they have 13 miles on that trail. Yeah. So they wouldn't let me. And I'm glad they didn't, because it would have been too hard. It would have been too difficult at that point in time. I mean, it'd been all trail, but it'd been too difficult. And so why I wanted to do that was I wanted to have a point-to-point race, because I thought that would be much more interesting, because what I run at that time, I'd run Western States 100 mile, which is point-to-point, and I'd run JFK, which is point-to-point, basically. So yeah. I thought, I want a point-to-point race, and it's much more interesting. It's much more difficult to put it on. You have to have much more aid stations. It's harder to put it on. And, of course, we had pre-race and post-race. And the pre-race and post-race usually was in Lynchburg. It wasn't always. And that was a difficult thing, which involved a long bus ride. But still, we worked it out. And I like that. And I think the majority of runners like that. I sort of like the course now. It does have the second half, but it's different. But
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
They're doing a good job. They're really reviving it. And I'm glad to see that.
Yeah, I had no idea that was the general origin. And it's interesting. It makes a lot of sense now, just thinking about kind of the direction of the course following the AT, but not being able to be on the AT. And then it sounds like you just told us the origin of Horton Miles as well. And it started with the ranger and adding in the Mount Pleasant loop and saying, yeah, that's good enough, which I think is a great, it takes a good mind to not be bothered by that and kind of set the tone of like, yeah, close enough. How about the time of year? November, obviously, I think that's just such a special part of the race and the experience. So at that time you didn't have Promised Land. So why the fall?
Well, I wanted the peak colors. Mm-hmm. And originally the race was designed and held at the third Saturday in October.
Yeah.
And the third Saturday in October, generally speaking, was the peak of color years. And so we were forced to move it from that by the Park Service. But that was the original objective, to try to get it peak colors. Now, basically, what happens is that you'll have peak colors somewhere on the course, but usually the latter part of the course, it's past peak and it's brown and many of the leaves have fallen off completely.
Yeah. Although I'll say my years of running the race, I've had some, like you say, but some areas are just like magical, you know, the type of tree that's turning gold is just amazing. And it's still just, it feels peak fall for sure.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, I got this course. I'm going to start this race. How in the heck did you get the word out? Because there was not social media or the internet back then. So what do you remember? Like, how did you spread the word for this?
In fact, at that time, there wasn't an Ultra Running magazine. The Ultra Running magazine didn't come along till 1981. In fact, I heard about this magazine coming out. And I thought, yeah, I want to get that.
Yeah.
But how did I advertise it? Basically, I went to lots of races around, I'd go to, marathons and 10-mile races and other races like that around and tell them about what we're getting ready to have. And it took a while to build. It's like a business. You don't build a business in a year or two. It takes a period of time. And it took a period of time to build the Damascus up.
What, are you dropping off pamphlets and stuff?
Yes. Applications, race applications.
Yeah.
Just like you get sent out or print off from Hellgate.
Yes, yes.
Otherwise, people don't see applications now.
Yeah, that's amazing. So that's literally the only way, minus maybe some occasional relationships, I guess, you had made after 4 years of ultra running as well.
Yep, that's right.
And then I think about like organizing the race, things like a volunteer base. Those of us who put on races, you just realize how huge that is. You have to have it. And as races progress, you kind of get a community and you start to have a volunteer base that grows. But back then, not a big ultra running community and no masochist history. So were you just grabbing neighbors and stuff? How did you get the volunteers to help out with everything?
Sometimes I got students, didn't like to have students. I like to have ultra runners, like to have runners, period. And ultra runners in particular to work the aid stations, couldn't always get that. And of course, what happened was people would work the aid stations and they'd say, hey, I want to do this. And then the next year they'd be running the race instead of helping with the race. So basically, just friends and neighbors and colleagues at Liberty and students. And what's interesting is that Joe Tyree will be working on November 1st at Mascus somewhere. And he and his family have worked it every single year since the start of the race. And he's had kids and grandkids who worked the aid stations, and he'll be working it this Saturday. And he's a non-runner.
Yeah.
And they've worked it every year. So that's really cool to see stuff like that. And there was a lot of other people would work the same aid station year after year after year. And they were known for that. Like Buck Mountain was known for playing Rocky music and real loud and motivational music and Rocky music. And the radio guys would say, hey, please get him to get something else so he doesn't play the same song over and over. But anyway, Lou Baston was working that aid station, and he worked it for years and years and years. And that aid station was famous. Did you remember running that when it was the old course?
Oh, I totally remember. And I loved that aid station. This is at the top of the Buck Mountain climb after you leave 60
Longmont, coming back.
And it was always just this guy's Jeep or Suburban or whatever up there. And you were so grateful to see him because you knew you were at least done with that big climb.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it's a testament to you as well. I think you're just grabbing all these people to help. And that takes a certain type of personality to somehow convince, you know, people you work with, neighbors, friends, all these non-running people to come and help out. And you have a lot of that, as I enjoy coming out to Hellgate and, you know, and some of the times I've done trail work with you and met some people who don't run, but they just love helping you out. So again, I think it's you could write a book on how to do it, and that's a big part of it is gathering that community that's maybe not necessarily has anything to do with running, but somehow decides helping out.
You got to make it fun.
Yeah.
You got to make it an experience for them, just like experience for them, experience for the runners. And so you have to talk it up and you have to be excited about it and get them excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah. When did you kind of realize you had something special going on? You know, I don't think you're the type of person who sits back and says, this is the greatest race, you know, ever. But, you know, at some point you must have felt like, all right, this thing is filling every year and we're having a good race. What did that take? 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? At what point were you just really feeling good about the history and the fulfillment of the race?
No, it's probably along 5 or 10 years, because basically he got lots of the same people coming back year after year after year. And I think it's 5 to 10 years. And it just took a while for them to realize how much fun, how neat this can be. And of course, for years, I kept individual age group records and age group records. Yeah. And people are always looking at those too. So just trying to make it exciting, interesting, challenging. And of course, could you compare times from year to year? And the answer is no, you couldn't. It's not like Promised Land and Hellgate, which both of those races have never changed one iota.
Yeah.
And so the times from one year to another year are equivalent, but not Damascus. Over the years, we had lots and lots of changes on the course. And sometimes there were some significant changes.
Yeah. Yeah. I do appreciate that. I talk to so many people as someone who's just about to turn 50. And the number of people I talk about going after the Hellgate age group record for this group or the Promised Land age group record, it's a lot of fun. And it kind of hurts that we don't have that same ability to compare the masochist data. But who knows, maybe now that the course is pretty great and the logistics are great, we'll have a long period of time where we can start to gather that data again.
It takes time.
Well, I think also, this is kind of one of my last questions here for you is, you know, the masochist, to me right now, is a great example of a race that has changed with the times. You know, it's been forced to change with the times due to logistics, the difficulty getting buses and things like that. And, you know, it used to be a point-to-point, and it used to be this big weekend affair where it started with a Friday night dinner, the race Saturday, the post-race dinner Saturday night. And you know, maybe that fit a little bit better with life in the 80s and 90s, but nowadays, right or wrong, I think people are busy. And I do think this new setup that the RDs, you know, Jordan Cooter, Tim Spaulding, Brenton Swires, they have the logistics all right there. The course, I've told you, I love the course now. It's just great. I think it's harder. And to me, it's an improvement. No offense, of course, David. I love the point-to-point idea that you had. But all the festivities and everything is right there. And even the addition now of a 50K and 100K that really offers a lot to other people. And I know a lot of people who have come out to run the 50K who wouldn't have done the 50 miler. And I thought that was a positive. So I'm curious your thoughts on a race like this that you started, where just the balance of like, how do you feel with balancing the tradition of having the same course for so long with the other reality of, hey, the race is still going strong and you're still seeing all these finishers come up past the fish hatchery and run into the Montebello store field after doing something really hard. So what are your thoughts about all that change?
I sometimes have mixed emotions. A lot of people for years had said, hey, Long Mountain Wayside, if you get there, that's 26.9 miles. That's what I said it was. It was more than that. But they said, how about a marathon? Just a marathon to there. So we'll have two races. I said, nope. I want to put all the focus on one race and want all people racing one race. And I know now I like that the 50K is there. With the addition of the 100K, I think that's, I have one word for that, stupid. But anyway, the 50K and the 50 mile, having those two is good. 100K added to it, I don't think that's good. The day links, you get into the night and people are working aid stations a long, long time. And that's why I did organize one time the Double Masochist 100-mile fun run. And gosh, that was crazy. And only two people finished out of like 20 people who started it. And I thought, nope, don't want to do that. Yeah. A station works out to work too long. Yep. And so I axed that idea after having the fun run. So I don't necessarily like having two races. I sort of wish there was just one race, but I do like the 50K. And I think that's perfect for people who are going to be doing Hellgate, the 50K in preparation for that, you know, 6 weeks later running 100K, and I think that's much, much better. So I don't necessarily like that, but I think it's good. It's getting more participants there, and now it's really difficult getting the number of participants that you need for a race unless it's one of the major, major races like Western States or Hard Rock, where you get too many people. Just like Hellgate right now is having that same problem. There's going to be a lot of people turned away this year. And everyone might not be happy with the decisions that the committee makes in terms of who is allowed to run and who is not. So there's always decisions there. But I think, again, the guys are doing a good job now with all the cooking they do at the finish line. And they'll have, you know, pizza on Friday night. And I think that's good. So they're sort of getting a pre- and post-race thing. And I think all that's good.
Yeah. And
so I like the direction it's going.
And I totally, I think, you know, it's very understandable the you know, the mixed feelings with having more than one race and the, you know, the out and back course versus the point to point. And then at the same time, as someone who's run the old course and who's run the new course, it's still very much, my memory just goes to hanging out at the Montebello field after the race with friends. You know, last year we had such a great time. It was one of those really nice weather days, and you and I and Michelle and just all our friends hung out for hours watching all these people coming in from all these different distances, and And that is what it's all about when it really comes down to it. So I do think that that is just a very, very positive thing, and I'm so glad that it's going strong, and I think their numbers are building every year, so that's really great. Will we see you there in a few weeks?
Have you ever not seen me there?
I have never not seen you there.
Okay. I've never missed a race.
Yeah.
Even 1 year, I had to have my wife. I had a broken leg, a crate had fallen on my leg at a freight company and broke three bones. And my leg was in a cast. And my wife had to drive me from my A station to A station, then on the finish. So I was there. And basically, I was supposed to use crutches, but I got around faster with just hopping around. So basically, I was hopping around all day. So never missed a race. Don't plan on missing one. I can't imagine the race being held without me being there. I will be there as long as I can.
Yeah, fantastic. I look forward to seeing you there. I will be there. I am doing just what you said. I'm signed up for the 50K. This is the first time I've not done the 50 miler, but I want to put in one more good training block for Hellgate. So I felt like this would be good. And I'm excited for the 50K. I think the course is great, and I'm looking forward to some competition. I have one Masochist story that just keeps coming to my mind is my second year running Masochist. I had consulted with you about how to kind of get faster, and you'd give me a lot of good tips, and I had implemented that all summer and was working really hard.
You
And
pay me for that coaching?
no, I didn't. You were unpaid.
I've
And
never been paid for coaching. I will
yeah,
never be paid for coaching.
well, I so appreciate it because I didn't know you well, and Bethany Patterson said I should give you a call and you'd be happy to talk training. And it was very incredible to me that someone like you would talk to someone like me, just telling me some good tips. I remember getting the phone call and fielding that. And then, the goal, of course, was getting into that coveted top 10. And back then, you kind of had to run under 8 hours, which was this magical time, sub 8. And I remember running on the course, and I was approaching Porter's Ridge. Which there's no longer an aid station there, but for people listening, it's you're just a little bit before 5 miles to the finish where I was, and I'm just suffering and having a hard time. And here comes David Horton on his mountain bike, and you didn't encourage me, you didn't say you got this, or anything. You just said better hurry up, you don't have much time, because you knew I was going for sub 8. And that was it. It was very brief, but it was classic you, where it's not your goal. You very clearly put the responsibility of someone's challenge where it should be, which is on themselves. And that's a
Yes.
perfect interaction I remember of like, well, he doesn't care if I finish or not. He's just telling me you better get your butt in gear. And that actually really motivated me, and it was a great way of just saying, like, yeah, I'm responsible for buckling up and suffering here, and just really appreciate that about you. And I think that's a big part of the Mountain Masochist right there, that obviously you're the same person who started it and talked to so many people over the years. So again, on behalf of Virginia Ultra Runners, thank you for being the person who's really added so much to the community and to that.
You get sub eight.
I did. I was like
Excellent.
7:59. Yep, just barely.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it was
Well,
great.
basically, I speak the truth. I speak the truth in love. I speak the truth in the fact that I want people to achieve their goals, and they've got to do it. They've
Yeah.
got to do it. So I put the onus on them because it's there. And I do love the Masochists. I love the people of the Masochists. I love the runners. I love seeing the race.
Yeah. Well, I again look forward to seeing you there. Thank you for taking a little bit of time out of this day to chat with me and put this podcast out there. And to everybody else, I hope people listen and will come and celebrate Masochist Day on the first Saturday of November. It is not to be missed.
See
All
you
right.
there, John.
Thank you, David. Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.